नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 4, Chapter 28, Puranjana becomes a woman in the next life. Text number 43. Patim parama dharma gya, sorry, patim parama dharma gyam, tim dharma dharma gyam, vaidharbi malayadvajam. प्रेमना पर्याचरद्धित्वा भोगांसा पतिदेवता पतिं परमाधर्माज्ञं वैदर्भिमलयद्वजम् प्रेमना पर्याचरद्धित्वा भोगांसा पतिदेवता पतिं परमाधर्माज्ञं वैदर्भिमलयद्वजम् प्रेम्णा पर्याचरद्धित्वा भोगांसा पतिदेवता Word for word, Patim, her husband, Parama, supreme, Dharmagyam, knower of religious principles, Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, Malayadvajam, named Malayadvaja, Premna, with love and affection, Pariyacharat, served in devotion. Hitva, giving up. Bhogan, sense enjoyments. Sa, she. Patidevata, accepting her husband as the Supreme Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband, who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. Purport. Figuratively, King Malayadvaja is the spiritual master and his wife, Vaidarbhi, is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Guru Vastaka, Sakshad Haritvena. One directly accepts the Guru, the spiritual master, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant to the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. If a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain a similar opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. It's translation again. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband, who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in her service. So Puranjana has become a woman in his next life, as the title of the chapter states. So we have to remember, this is still and the allegory being continued. So this is an allegorical description. This is not a factual, historical narrative. It's an allegory. So Puranjana, he was, as we've been hearing the story of Puranjana up till now, and he was very attached to his body. He was engaged in various sensual activities, in a lot of sense gratification. And what's so amazing is that he has become a woman in his next life because he was attached to his wife. And as Krishna says, whatever one remembers at the time of death, one attains that form. So because he was so absorbed in his wife, he became a woman. But the most advanced and most amazing thing is he's got in touch with the devotee because in this allegory, now Puranjana, who is a she, Vaidarbhi, and she's married to Mala Yadvaj, who is a great devotee. And as we've been hearing, Mala Yadvaj, when he became old, he went to the forest and he performed great penances. In other words, he was in the Vanaprastha stage, and in the Vanaprastha stage back then, at that in that particular time, they used to go to the forest or various places of pilgrimage and perform great austerities. So just like even in the Ramayana, Sita went to the forest too, right? So Lord Ram was banished to the forest for 14 years, and Sita, she accompanied her husband. So Vaidarbhi, being the queen, she was accustomed to great opulences, because someone who's living in a palace, who's an administrator, they're generally very accustomed to very luxurious lifestyle, lots of opulences. So then Vaidarbhi went to the forest and performing great tapasya, as we will hear in the next verse. Up till now we've been hearing about Malayadvaj, how he was performing so many austerities, his body became thin, emaciated. So she was performing too. And even Sita, when Ram was banished to the forest, she went along with the husband, and it came as a great shock and to the citizens that here is the princess, she's going to live in the forest, not used to such a lifestyle. You can try to put yourself in, we can't live in a forest. To go on a camping for a weekend might be enough. Yeah, we can go with all our paraphernalia. But they were living in the forest without any facility, without any camping gear. So, but the amazing thing is, she got in touch with Malayadvaj, who's an advanced devotee, and he was performing all these tapasyas. And he so much so that he realized the super soul. He understood he's not this body, he's the spirit soul, and sitting in the body accompanying him is the other bird or the super soul there. So he came to that realization. So here, Vaidharbhi has taken the role of the disciple, because this is an allegory. So Vaidharbhi is the disciple, and Malayadvaj is the spiritual master. And here she has taken the, being the disciple, taken the menial role, right? So a disciple takes the position of a menial servant of the spiritual master. So there's this verse in the, I think, Katha Upanishad. Tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva vigachet samit pani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. So it says, in order to learn the transcendental science, one must approach the bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession, who is fixed in the absolute truth. So it says that in order to learn the science of Godhead, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master. And what's that verse in the famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 434? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. So it says that tadvidhi pranipatena. If one wants to know the truth, one has to approach a spiritual master and render service with submission, in a mood of sevaya, in service, and inquire inquisitively, right? So a disciple accepts the position of a menial servant to the spiritual master. So we see even Krishna, in Krishna Leela, when his friend Sudama came to visit him in the palace, when Sudama was under extreme poverty, as a Brahmana he was living in extreme poverty, that he went to his friend Krishna to ask him for some financial aid. He didn't want to go, but he went there. So Krishna, he served his friend very nicely. He welcomed him, washed his feet, fed him a nice meal, gave him a place to rest. Then when he was well rested, he went and inquired about his welfare, and they were reminiscing about their past. And Krishna and Sudama, they were students in the ashram of their guru, Sandipani Muni. So they both were disciples of Sandipani Muni. And being disciples, every day as brahmacharis, they would go out and collect firewood. So they would act as menial servants of the spiritual master by literally going out and collecting firewood for the ashram of the guru. And also like collect alms. So they would go out in the forest, maybe chop firewood or find any wood lying around and get it. So one time they were out in the forest, there was a big storm, it got dark and they lost their way. So they got lost, maybe they didn't have a flame or a torch, they got lost. So they spent the whole night shivering, freezing in the forest. And then when next day it was light, Sandipani Muni and his disciples, they went out in a party to search for their disciples the next day. Just like even today, like when somebody gets lost in a forest, the emergency services, if it's dark, they call off the search because it's so difficult to find even with the lights. So the next day, Sandipani Muni and his disciples, they went, and then they found Krishna and Sudama. And so, and then Sandipani Muni was very pleased because Krishna and Sudama, they were out there serving the spiritual master. So when the spiritual master is served by the disciple, then that pleases the spiritual master. So by the act of service, and here said like menial service, by the act of menial service, the spiritual master is pleased. So menial service can take various forms. It doesn't necessarily mean collecting wood, right? Doesn't mean like you have to go to the state forest next to the farm or wherever and look for wood and bring it here. So it's just not that. There's so many, the menial service takes various shapes and forms. It can be collecting Lakshmi for the movement, or can be selling books, or can be cleaning the temple, or giving a talk, or doing various other services. So any service can be a menial service. It's not necessarily something which is looked down upon is a menial service. So by rendering service to a spiritual master, that pleases the spiritual master. So if one is serious about vigyan, about getting vigyan, then one has to go to a spiritual master, not any ordinary person. So if we want gyan of Krishna, then you have to go to the spiritual master. Like if you want to learn, if we use an IT example, if you want to learn AWS, you have to go to an accredited training provider, right? If you want to learn some technology, then there are various certification providers. You have to go to one of them and learn from them, because they are authorized to teach you. So they have received the gyan, and they're authorized to teach it. So you have to go to them. You can't go to anyone else. In the same way, if we have to go to Krishna, then you have to approach the spiritual master, because the spiritual master is the authorized representative of Krishna. Just like the ambassador is the authorized, in every country there's an every country has embassies of various other countries. So like in Australia, also Australia has embassies of practically so many countries of the world, except for maybe a few. So there's the embassy of India, there's the US embassy. There's usually an area in Canberra, there's one area where most of the embassies are there. So in these embassies, the law of the host country doesn't apply within the embassy. That's why Julian Assange was sitting in the Ecuadorian embassy, because then the UK, your law didn't apply to him. He was sitting in there for a long time, right? So the ambassador in the country is the ambassador in the embassy is the representative of the country of that embassy, right? So the US ambassador is the representative of Trump, basically. So if you want to approach the US, you approach through the embassy. Or if you get a fine, for example, now we have fines, Victoria. So if you get a fine, you don't go to SCOMO to pay the fine. Right, you go to Fines Victoria. If you get an infringement, parking infringement or a traffic infringement, there's Fines Victoria, they issue you the fine, and then you pay the fine through them. So in the same way, if we want to approach Krishna, Krishna has his bona fide representative, who is the spiritual master. So we have to approach Krishna through the guru, and that is the parampara system. And Krishna explains that parampara system in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the first three verses, he says, I spoke this knowledge to the sun god Vivasvan. Vivasvan spoke it to Manu, the father of mankind. Manu spoke it to Ikshvaku. And now it is coming again. So the science of Krishna is received through the parampara system. And he says, over time, this knowledge was lost because the parampara system was broken. So therefore, I'm speaking this knowledge to you again, Arjuna. So in the same way, if we have to receive this knowledge, we have to come in the parampara system. And the parampara system is there in the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he lists the parampara. And then Prabhupada is coming there in the parampara. So now our spiritual masters are also coming in that parampara from Srila Prabhupada. They're continuing in that parampara from Srila Prabhupada. So if we have to approach the Supreme Lord, then we have to approach through the chain of disciplic succession or the gurus coming. And in that way, we can connect to the parampara. So therefore, that's very important. And so the blessings of the guru, they come from service. So when the guru is pleased by the service of the disciple, they bestow the blessings for their advancement in Krishna consciousness. So just like when Sandipuni Muni was very pleased by Krishna's service, though Krishna is God, he set an example by accepting a spiritual master. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever a great man does, common men follow. So Krishna set the example himself by accepting a spiritual master. So then Sandipani Muni was very pleased by Krishna, and he gave his blessings. And we know in this pastime that Krishna, when after he had killed Kamsa, Vasudev, he sent him to school, right? He sent him to the ashram of Sandipani Muni. And there Krishna, every day he learned one art. Every day he mastered one art. So can you imagine? One day you master music. All types of music in the world. And which is amazing. Or one, and next day maybe painting. It's like an artist. It takes people just their whole life to master one aspect of maybe art, you know. Right? Like one can master one style of painting. But then Krishna learned everything, and then he was speaking the language of the birds. So he learned the 64 arts in 64 days. So he was quite an amazing disciple. So then when the guru is pleased, they give their blessings. They open their heart, and the storehouse of knowledge flows through the guru to the disciple. So we see in Prabhupada's pastimes, when the devotees in the early days, they were serving Srila Prabhupada, and like Mukunda, Janaki, and so many others, they were opening all these centers. And Prabhupada was very pleased with them. And you could see why it's and they were only focused on Prabhupada's pleasure. So they were doing their service to please Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada would be pleased, they would also advance so much in Krishna consciousness. And you could see the proof of that was they were doing so many amazing things because Prabhupada was pleased with them, and they were empowered to do great things. So then what is the qualification of a guru? Again, in the same verse it is said, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Right? So such a guru, a spiritual master, has to be completely, Shrotriyam means they have to be completely absorbed in the Vedas. So they have to be know the Shastra. And Brahmanishtam, they have to be absorbed in Brahman or Krishna. So the qualification of an advanced devotee, as the three types of devotees, is that they know the scripture very well. They have strong faith, they know the scripture, and they can, you know, convince others. So that's in other words, Shrotriya means they are completely absorbed in scriptures. So in the 11th canto, the Navayogendras, in the pastime to instructions to Maharaj Nimi, there's this verse, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyasu Shreyam Uttamam Shabde Parecha Nishnatam Brahmani Upa Shrama Shreyam. So it says, therefore any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of this bona fide guru is that he has realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is able to convince others of these conclusions. So again, they know the scripture very well and they can convince others. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be bona fide spiritual masters. So if one wants to cross the ocean of birth and death, then one has to accept a guru and serve and get practical guidance. So one has to accept a guru, someone who one is inspired by, who one feels, because all the gurus, they give the same teachings in essence, but one has to be inspired by them and see if their instructions are most relevant to their lives. So they all, though, giving the same truth, but you have to see who you feel instructions are most relevant to your life and who you can relate to the most as a person. And then accept that guru and take guidance from them. So then here there's also talk about how one should regard a guru. So Srila Prabhupada saying, Sakshat Dharitvena Samasta Shastra, right? So here it is said that one directly accepts the guru, the spiritual master, as the supreme personality of Godhead. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense of the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. So basically, one should regard the guru as good as Hari, but not Hari. So, it doesn't mean that the guru is God. So it is said one should accept the spiritual master as the supreme personality of Godhead, but that doesn't mean that the guru is God. So the difference between God and the jiva or the guru is that the God is omniscient, whereas the guru is not. So like Prabhupada, several times he said, sometimes devotees asked him, or they regarded Prabhupada as God. Some of his disciples, they started saying Prabhupada is God. There's some pastimes like that. But Prabhupada corrected them. He said, I'm not God because I'm not all-knowing. So God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. Right? So God, omnipotent, he has so many energies. God is the source of all. Krishna is the source of all energies. And then Krishna is all-knowing as the Supersoul. And he's all-present as the Supersoul in the hearts of all living entities. Therefore, he's all-knowing. So sometimes devotees go on one on the other extreme. They think the guru is like God, but he's not God because he's not all-knowing. And or the other extreme is to take the guru as an ordinary person. So there's two extremes. One is you take the guru as an ordinary person, like any Joe, or you take him to be he's like God. He's God. Or they don't say that, you know, to act in that manner. Of course, we see in ISKCON now that though here it is said that one should accept the spiritual master as the supreme personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada says he should be treated exactly like the supreme personality of Godhead. So of course, in ISKCON it's not done to that extent. It's not because that didn't go down very well, if you look at the history. When the spiritual masters were treated like God, and for some it went to the head, and so it didn't go very well. So of course that level of worship it's reduced, the level of worship has been reduced. But still for the disciple, one has to accept the spiritual master as the representative of God, and follow the instructions. So again, he's the representative, and the guru is like the via medium to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is the medium through which one can, the transparent via medium through which one can approach Krishna. Just like if you have glass, you can see through glass, right? So if there is glass in front of you, if the glass is very clean, you can see through it. And sometimes it is so clean, sometimes people walk into it. Has it ever happened to you? The glass is so clean and you have walked into it, it's a very embarrassing situation. Boom. And that's why they put markings on glass, right? So you don't accidentally walk into it. So the spiritual master is like that. He's the transparent via medium through which you can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or through which you can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that's a very important point, that we need to understand the difference between Guru and God, that the Guru is not God. And in India we see sometimes so many Gurus, they claim themselves to be God. So they say, I'm God because I can produce some gold from my mouth, or I can, they have this siddhi or that siddhi, just because they can demonstrate some siddhi. The foolish disciples or people, they think that this personality is God. So like Lord Rishabdev, he is the one of the incarnations of the Supreme Lord. And when he was lying down, and when he was passing stool and urine, the stool and urine was so fragrant, it was fragrant for miles and miles. Right? So the stool and urine of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fragrant. So if someone says, I'm God, you can just do the stool and urine test. You say, okay, Mr. God, can we take a sample? Though not a very pleasant test. Can we take a sample and see if you're God? So if it is very fragrant, you know, okay, they're God. But if it's not, you know they're not God. They're a hoax. So the Guru is not God. And it is a big mistake to accept the Guru as God, even on an emotional level. Right? If you might not say it, but if you're on an emotional level, you accept it, it's a big mistake. And Prabhupada, many times he corrected. So the criteria of an acharya or a guru or a spiritual master is, number one, they need to know the Shastra. So anyone can be a guru. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kininai. So it is said that anyone who knows the science of Krishna, in other words, anyone who knows the Shastra, the science of Krishna, that's one qualification of being a spiritual master. And then they have to, number two, they have to know the Bhagavat, the Bhagavatam, and then they have to be a living Bhagavat. They have to live the teachings of the Shastra. And then number three, they have to teach that. So they, in other words, they need to do preaching. They have to teach that and they have to preach this knowledge. So if they're doing these three things, then they can be qualified to be a spiritual master. So in the coming verses, we will hear how Malayadvaj will depart. Right, so Malay in this allegory, Malayadvaj is the guru or the spiritual master. So when the guru departs, then the disciple has to take shelter of the vani. So the guru has two aspects: the vapu, which is the physical presence, and the vani, the instructions. So when our spiritual masters they depart, then we have to take shelter of the vani and advance in Krishna consciousness. So the vani is left behind. We are very fortunate. We have Prabhupada, so many thousands of lectures. There's the audio recordings. We can directly hear Prabhupada's voice. There are his letters. There are his books. This is Prabhupada's vani. So though so many of us are not fortunate to have seen Prabhupada face to face or interacted with him, as maybe some of you are in this room. But We are still fortunate because we have access to Srila Prabhupada through his books, through his vani, in the form of his books and his lectures, right? And by hearing them and by getting in touch with his vani, it is as good as coming in touch, you know, directly with Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, I'm leaving these books, and these books are as good as me. He said that. So, and he had so much confidence in his vani that that so much so that he knew the movement can carry on simply if devotees are in touch with his vani through his books. And we are seeing the practical proof of that. Prabhupada, through the distribution of Prabhupada's literature, people are becoming devotees. So by reading Prabhupada's books, by hearing to his lectures, the people are becoming, by listening to his quotes, people are becoming devotees. So it is practical proof that that the guru is present in the vani. So we'll leave it there. See if you have any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yes, Prabhuji. Yeah. Yeah, so the last paragraph is, if a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain a similar opportunity to serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I knew someone would bring that up. So it's if a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. So in a marriage is meant for service. So it's not only the wife serving the husband, it's also the husband serving the wife. Sometimes this is taken in the wrong way because here it is. And thanks for bringing this up, Prabhuji, important point. Forgot to address it. That sometimes men think that when they come across purports like this or verses like this, that they think that it's only the wife who is meant to serve the husband in the marriage. And the husband is like the big guru, and the wife is meant to render all kinds of services. But as I was saying, a marriage is both ways, right? So, and by nature, we are servants of Krishna. Everyone is a servant of Krishna, including the men. So the men are also meant to serve their wives by taking care of their needs. And when I'm saying needs, all kinds of needs on the physical, spiritual, emotional level. Everyone has different needs, including the men. So the men have to serve the women, and the wife has to serve her husband. And if any man desires service at such a level, then they have to understand that they have to be, what Prabhupada is saying, a pure devotee. And how many are pure devotees? How many are on that level? Right, so like generally the men, and I'm just paraphrasing my spiritual master, I've heard this in some lectures, he says generally the men want a Draupadi, but they're not prepared to be a Yudhishthir. And sometimes likewise. So if you're expecting something like that, then you have to live up to the ideal standard, right? Which is very rare. So one has to do one's best, and even within marriage, take guidance from other devotees, other senior grihasthas, to see how one can make one's grihastha ashram successful, because it is challenging. And sometimes this wrong understanding creates so many problems in a marriage, where the man has this wrong idea of being a man, and they accept that they just think that the women are meant to be subservient. But Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, he encouraged the women so much also in Krishna consciousness. It's not that the women are only supposed to make garlands or just do all the menial work. But Srila Prabhupada, he gave the women in Krishna consciousness also so much opportunity and facility to render all kinds of services. Right, so they were giving lectures, they were doing the aartis too. You can see videos. They are doing the aartis, they are leading kirtans, they are doing books. So it's equal. In Krishna consciousness, the men and women are equal in that respect. Anyone can do any service according to their ability. So if they have some ability to do some service, then they should be encouraged to do service in that way. And especially in the Western world, it is very important that women are on an equal footing in that respect, right? Because if you put women down, then you don't have much chance of progression. So it is very important men and women are treated equally and respectfully and not suppressed. Then it's very difficult to progress as a movement, especially in the Western world. And Prabhupada also, he recognized that. He said, I've come to your country, and he studied, and he said, I've noticed the men and women, they intermingle a lot, and they like to be equal. So Prabhupada, he gave them that facility to render all sorts of services. But doesn't mean that the woman is a man and a man is a woman. And Prabhupada also, he emphasized, a man cannot give birth to a woman. Cannot give birth. And the woman physically, we are not the same. So we are different physically, mentally, but at the same time we have to be given equal opportunity to render service. So the differences have to be taken in accord, but also if someone has certain ability to do service, they should not be discouraged. For the world.
And I can do what I like with them. And when a woman has an independent thought or is not satisfied in a particular situation because the man is neglectful or harmful or so on, and she feels threatened that she wants to leave, then the man becomes upset to the extent we saw this horrific thing that happened where a woman and her three children
were
killed by her husband because he felt that she was my possession and my children were my possession. And this is the importance of spreading Krishna consciousness, is to make people understand, number one, you're not this material body, you're not male or female, and number two, we have to exist together in a spirit of love and humility. So,
correct, yeah. Thank you, and thanks for bringing it up. Yeah, so they're not men's possession, but though they're meant to be offered protection. Yeah, you know, so as Prabhupada says. Is a different context.
Yeah, yeah. So when the story was written in the scripture, it was a different culture. And women didn't go to school, they didn't, right? So the only way for women to get the knowledge usually was through the husband.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
And because that is not sometimes clarified in the purport.
Yeah. That's right.
I don't understand that. This is a story that was like 100,000 years ago. Right? Or even the allegory.
And that's where the
story was correct. People of that time.
And that's where the, I guess, explanation comes in. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And like we're having this discussion now. Yes, so very different time, place, and circumstance. The context is very different. Yeah, sure.
Just in regards to Prabhupada, as far as at one stage people considered him to be God.
That's right.
Prabhupada was so upset. He was so upset that people would even think that he was God. And this is the position of a pure devotee, although we should treat him like God. But the fact that he loves God so much to even think that he can compare me to my beloved.
Mm. That's right.
He was so upset. You know, he called a special meeting, he was crying, he was upset over this one point.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for expanding on that, yeah. So, a pure devotee or a spiritual master, if they regard themselves God, then there's something wrong there, right? They should be outraged, because Krishna is the object of worship. If you are now Krishna, that's very offensive, you know. Thank you. Yeah.
Based on the allegory of the story, you see the wife was serving the husband, but in today's culture, as Mataji was saying, what is an ideal, you know, we're not pure devotees, but what is an ideal situation for which a woman should look forward to, and an ideal for which a man should look forward to, so that the Grihastha ashram is perfect in serving Krishna? Given that the natural education actually destroys and makes us half humans, so how do we then balance it when we come into spiritual life? Because in the natural world, we all want to make things that are equal, but not. So how do we cleanse that filth that actually this education gives us and bring back us into a spiritual mode so that we can progress spiritually?
So what I'm hearing is asking, what is the ideal way to live as a married couple?
Yeah,
in today's. Okay, so. Basically, it means serve each other. Like when at my marriage, my Guru Maharaj came, and there he gave a talk, and then in the talk he made a statement. He said, "This is a partnership in enlightenment. This marriage is partnership in enlightenment." Right. So that's what marriage is about. It is helping each other to become Krishna conscious. So in a partnership, then you help each other to be Krishna conscious. Yes, so in helping each other, that involves teamwork, right? Just like if you're playing a sport involves teamwork. Like if you're playing cricket or football, then you all act together. You have one goal. You have a certain goal. You want to achieve that. And in if you want to have a healthy team, you have to treat each other respectfully. Like even at work, you know, we work in a team environment. So you have to treat everyone respectfully and equally, so you can achieve the same goal. So in the same way, as I was mentioning, a man will have certain needs, a woman will have certain needs, and we have to try to meet those needs. So there's material needs and there's spiritual needs, and both have to be met, and sometimes you have to juggle, you have to balance. Sometimes this is more, sometimes that is more, and that requires some intelligence. And if you're not sure, then we can ask others who have been down the path for and have much more experience. But the main thing is not to use the marriage as a means to control the other person. Maybe those who are, you know, married in this room for a very long time, we have Prabhudas Bhakti, maybe you like to share your experience, practical experience on this.
Children come along, one child, two child, three
school of hard knocks. Great. Thank you for sharing profound realizations. Yeah, his exact wording was, he was just describing to the audience what marriage is, because some new people also. He said, a Krishna conscious marriage is a partnership in enlightenment. Thank you. That's great. Thanks. No, the guru is respected, and because the guru is respected, we, like, one of the ways of respecting the guru is by offering an aarti. So an aarti is like a welcome to a very respectable person. And just because we are offering an aarti doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada is God. So yes, we are worshipping Prabhupada by offering an aarti, because he is the medium to take us to Krishna. Just like if the Prime Minister walked in here, we will treat him in a very, very respectful way, much more than maybe me or you get treated, right? He'll be offered lots of garlands, he'll be brought nice prasadam. Even when the Premier came here, they were given the royal treatment, because they are the head of the state. And similarly, the guru is, he's representing Krishna. Krishna is making himself accessible through him. Therefore, we offer them a lot of respect. And part of offering them respect, one of the ways of offering them respect is by offering an aarti. And every day, Srila Prabhupada, because he is the founder acharya of this movement, so Prabhupada has a very special position. To keep Srila Prabhupada in the center, we offer him an aarti every day. And that's something Srila Prabhupada himself instituted, but doesn't make him God. So it's an important point.
What we worship is
That's right. And the main way of exactly worshipping, as Mataji said, is by following the knowledge or the teachings. And that's how you really worship him. Yes, we show respect by offering aarti, but it's Krishna, Guru is really worshipped by following his instructions. You've been very quiet, Prabhu, all this time. Yeah.
So as a devotee, you have to be very careful. You have to respect each other and carefully follow the instruction of Guru, and that is the safest way to be.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll. Yeah. Sits on the
lotus plants.
In
Prabhupada, in his book, most of his books, he is referring to the lotus feet, right? So I'm curious to know, is there any reason behind why Prabhupada is comparing to lotus feet, why not like rose feet?
Why not?
Rose feet are some other flower. So why is specifically lotus feet? Is there any reason God knows specifically lotus?
The lotus is one of the. So, question is, he's saying. Why we approach Krishna through the lotus feet, not rose feet or frangipani feet, or why that flower? So lotus is like the king of flowers, is the king of flowers, and it's a very, very beautiful flower. That's why it is referred to a lot, because it has extraordinary beauty. That's my understanding. And lotus is also very unique. It can grow in, it grows above water, right? It grows in water, and it's sitting above it. It's not affected by the water. Is that right, Prabhu?
It can grow
from filthier places, yes. So even in a filthy place, you'll see a lotus growing, but such a beautiful flower in such an environment. So Krishna can, you know, make himself manifest anywhere. And so why we approach Krishna through the feet? Because that's the system. You approach any respectable personality from the feet, not directly from the face. And even the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10 cantos, the 10th canto is like the face of Krishna, whereas the first canto is the feet of Krishna. So we approach a great personality respectable through the feet, not directly look at their face. Even when we approach the deity, the proper way of looking is by starting to look at the lotus feet. So Krishna's feet are compared to like lotuses. The lotus feet, they're so beautiful. So then we go up like that. You had one final point. In regards to, sorry? Yes, yeah, so in this day and age, it'll be quite different to what the Vanaprastha lifestyle they're exhibiting in these verses. I'm not an expert in Vanaprastha, but from what I've seen, I'm not sure about that, but I'm too far away. But from what I've seen, like the husband and wife, they're traveling. You know, they're not working. They're like retired from working life. The kids are settled down. Kids are settled. Kids are working. They're just traveling and preaching, sharing Krishna consciousness That's my experience of this is what I've seen of Vanaprastha around me. Maybe like yeah, it's just different for everyone. And it's something that happens naturally. It's not like they formally announce, I'm going in Vanaprastha. And as you said, it's a very personal thing. For everyone will be different depending on their personal circumstances. And they just Krishna conscious and go about their service, right? Whatever in that stage of life. Thank you. Good point. All right, it's been a great discussion. Very stimulating. And thank you for all your input. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And I'd like to thank the seniors for their wonderful input and the realizations. Hare Krishna.